Hey everybody, welcome back with the Mentors. I'm Jamie. I'm here with my co-host Gabe. Gabe, how you doing, buddy?
Hello. I'm doing great. It's spring is around the corner. You know, we're sort of in that between Purim and Passover time of promise.
Late Passover this year.
Yeah, late Passover, late one. Normally, yeah. It's like beginning of baseball season. Now we're sort of we'll be a month in by the time Passover rolls around. Everyone will be established.
That's true. We will still do our Passover baseball Seder around Passover time. Maybe our next episode, maybe two episodes from now. And we'll save some MLB preview until then. But, it was really exciting to have Alex Bregman on last episode. And wish him all the luck. Magnate.
He's both. He's both.
Yeah, wishing him lots of luck this year, except right now against the Toronto Blue Jays, who we support obviously, and we'll talk more baseball in the in Passover time, I guess. But let's catch up on some Jewish sports news. I think there is one huge milestone that happened since we last spoke, which was Zach Hyman got his 50th goal.
Friend of the pod hit the Jubilee.
The Jubilee.
It's a huge, huge success, for, I would say, Zach and the community at large. Can I say that? Can we claim that it's just like we as a people have achieved a new height that we had not achieved before?
Well, absolutely. And just to give some context here, I think the fact that he's a 50 goal scorer now is not something you would have had on your bingo sheet. Any time in the last 10 years, maybe last year, you would have said, okay, there's a possibility.
Fewer than 100 people have ever done this.
When he was with Toronto, the most goals he ever scored in a year was 21.
Yeah.
And I think when he was with the Leafs, obviously well-regarded, considered one of the better,
he was a different kind of player. He wasn't there to be a goal scorer.
Exactly. And he also, he had some, determination and grit and all that. But as you say, he wasn't there to be a goal scorer. Goes to Edmonton, signs a significant free agent deal after the 2021 season and goes to Edmonton. Again, solid, increasing number of goals. Last year he had 36. This year he has 52.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I guess there's only 6 or 7 games left, so he probably won't get to 60. That would be pretty impressive, but, hopefully ends up 53, 55, yeah, something like that.
I would say 54 because it's 3 times his number. 54 would be the key, Jewish number. It would be like on a bar mitzvah check.
that's right. If you're being generous on the, it's like I'm going triple high here.
Yeah, triple high. If he can get the triple high, if he can get the live, if he can get live score.
I mean, I hope he scores as many goals as he can. Obviously, Edmonton will be in the playoffs, so he'll have a chance. Chance there as well.
He can hoist the cup, could be potential Conn Smythe candidate. Like they, Edmonton, for the degenerate gamblers amongst us, here's my betting tip of the week, that one of the biggest predictors of who's going to make the Stanley Cup final is who has the best record since January 1st in the NHL.
Okay, sure.
So more important towards playoff success is how well you're playing since Jan 1, and Edmonton has been the best team in the league since then. Right. So they've got a really, really good chance of making that happen.
So I just want to talk a little bit more about Hyman because a few other things happened. One, you mentioned, is it right to feel a sense of community pride? I mean, I think the whole premise of this podcast is Jews should feel proud of Jewish success.
Of other Jews.
And I think it hit home, especially for Canadian Jews, Toronto Jews, who even if they don't know Zach Hyman, didn't grow up around him necessarily, like he was a figure in the community, and so is his family. And this was something that he was, I don't want to say attacked exactly, but
it came up.
So after he scored his 50th goal, there was a commentary from a guy whose name his last name is Berkshire. I forget his name.
Some idiot.
Yeah. So hockey better than I. Was this guy is he a known, well-known blogger? He's just some schlub.
I would say he is like a man about Habs Twitter.
Okay. So if you're involved in Habs Twitter or Canadian hockey Twitter, you've probably seen him around kind of thing. You've seen his takes.
Exactly. Or posts and things like that. He's got memes. He's got takes. He is like, he runs a popular Habs blog.
Right. And he made a video, a TikTok. I don't know what it was.
It was sort of like a self-tape standing in a schoolyard. I don't think Habs fans were allowed in schoolyards, but
real funny world this is. That it's just like, yeah, I don't have to write an article anymore, just like mouth off on a take, and that's it. I guess I say this as someone who's
literally mouthing off literally, now.
Yeah, mouthing off right now. But regardless, this guy,
you're doing the yap.
This guy had comments basically about how the narrative in the media, you can triple parentheses that if you're annotating this podcast, hasn't reflected the fact that Zach Hyman comes from a rich family who supported him and supported his early hockey career. That, you know, this idea of him as just like this hardworking guy was unfounded, I guess, or
a lunch pail. He's been a lunch pail prototype for his whole career.
And it's like, no, he's not a lunch pail. He's getting catered lunches from Edo, it turns out, the whole time.
that's a local reference right there.
Yeah. Yeah. So this, I would say, I've never seen – it's rare to see a take blow up so quickly and so universally.
Yes.
Like, I didn't see one person on his side.
It was wild watching this guy blow up his own career in real time. Given the entire hockey media and former players – we're just like, nope, what you said was hateful and wrong. Like, it was that quick.
It was amazing because I think it speaks – it's a tremendous testament to Zach as a person, as a player, that everyone was like, you're wrong. This guy is incredibly hardworking. Like, we all love him and respect what he did.
As a person and a player.
And the fact that he scored 50 goals is a tremendous achievement and cap on his career. Again, a career that started with him, you know, getting drafted in the fifth round after a successful college career – and, you know, fighting for every inch of ice time as a pro and
yeah,
making it.
I want to dig deep on this. You know, there's a lot of NHL players who come from highly educational backgrounds. You know, there's a number of players who are Harvard grads. There's a number of players who are Princeton grads, Yale, et cetera, et cetera. But we think we did some research. We think Zach Hyman, he went to the University of Michigan, which of the last national American ranking was, I think, 20th. In terms of its academic success, he was an academic All-American.
It's a big state school, but it's a well-respected academic institution.
You know, he was a academic All-American at a top American university who then scored 50 goals in the NHL. I think he's the only person ever to do that. The only academic All-American to score 50 goals.
Yeah, so I think that's sort of like – that's our pretty chalk take.
Take
at this
that,
point,
Harvard.
Which is just like – you know, it's an amazing accomplishment. He's had an impressive career. It's amazing that he's got 50 goals in the season, and we'll see what he does in the future. I guess the interesting question I have about this guy's take and the response to it was whether or not there was some underlying anti-Semitism to it. And I think that was the read that a lot of people had very quickly from Jewish commentators and people talking about hockey and Jews who aren't interested in hockey as well. I mean, people pointed out that that there's another player, Sam Reinhart, who scored 50 goals this year, whose dad, I think, was an NHLer.
Why
aren't you talking about this guy? Like, he had an easy road, not an easy road. Again, if you are in a professional athlete, it's because you're exceptionally good at your sport, and there is zero chance
there is
that
no
you are
easy
going to get
way.
There.
There's no
without
easy
working
way
to incredibly
a professional
hard.
Athlete.
Yeah, but statistically, we obviously know that children of professional athletes, especially sons in the same sport as their fathers who played that game, statistically have a much higher chance of getting through. They get you know, all the advantages that are possible. But again, there are thousands of people who have been the child of an NHL player. Not all of them made the pros. The point is simply that
the vast majority of them don't.
The vast majority of them don't. The point is, this commentator who's picking on Hyman, why pick on Hyman versus somebody else? And, you know, there were some tweets he had made previously that were pro-Palestine. Again, I think people were digging through it and trying to find a spin on it that felt right. On the other hand, I don't know. I think it's reasonable when a famous Jewish person is being criticized unfairly to say, what is the reason for
this?
You know,
why are they being criticized in this particular way?
And I don't have an answer. I mean, I don't think there is an answer.
Unfortunately, you can't. There's no, like, you can't really A/B test it because there isn't another player who's got his exact, you know, career and whose name is like, I don't know.
Look, at the end of the day,
Zach Harkins. Trying to think of a non-Jewish similar name. It was a tough one.
I think there's been a conversation about anti-Semitism the last few years at least that Jews are having about whether, you know, what's important, and not just about anti-Semitism, but in other areas as well. It was like whether intent is important or not. Mm-hmm. And if it was just carelessness or I didn't realize this would be interpreted this way, is that a reasonable excuse? I think people have different lines drawn in different places. And this was one that for a lot of people just felt like, well, why are you attacking this Jewish player? That, again, first Jewish player to score 50 goals, incredibly celebrated thing within the Jewish sports community.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go after him for being a rich kid.
I'm going to double click on this two things. Yes. Going after him for being a rich kid. I think you nailed it there. We as Jewish people obviously know there's a lot of current conversation about Jews' adjacency to privilege, and which over the last, I would say, 2000 years plus has been phrased as Jews' adjacency to money. Especially talking about it, you know, in this context here too. I think another sort of important thing to talk about, which is sort of the difference, is we can compare it to Sauce Gardner this past week, who plays for the New York Jets, who sort of gave you know, an interview on some podcast talking about how Jews run the world and control all the money, but he found that impressive. That was like, he thought that was a good thing. And then his apology, you know, not a great thing to think, but his apology was, you know, the things I said, while I meant them okay, I understand that the exact same things are said by hateful people.
Right.
And I think this Habs blogger was not self-aware enough to say the same thing.
Yeah, fair enough. I think for the most part, when people have come out and said stupid things and then, or careless things, let's put it that way.
Yeah,
and
careless. I'm willing to call it careless.
Yeah, and then quickly apologize. I think it's just sort of like, well, okay, we understand. And, you know, we're not enthused by what you said, but we accept the, I don't know, apology or whatever.
bracket,
I don't know. I'm not. I'm not saying we're going to solve this issue. I just think, you know, it's all good. I think it's right for Jewish sports fans to be aware and on the lookout for anti-Semitism
to call it out when we see it. The next video this guy makes is about Quinn Hughes winning the Norris Trophy. If that's his next complaint, then I think we might have an open and shut case.
You know, speaking of other Jewish hockey players, Artemi Panarin,
the Breadman, New
York Rangers, the Breadman.
Yeah,
who we're going to talk about later in this episode as well, in another context, which I'm really excited about. Got to 100 points this year.
Yeah,
and he could get to 50 goals as well.
Yeah,
I believe he's at 44 right now. Probably not going to quite get there.
So as we know, you know, Artemi Panarin has a Jewish grandparent. He does not consider himself Jewish, but for the purposes of this podcast, we consider him Jewish as, you know, he hits that one grandparent way, you know, similar to David Beckham or Paul Goldschmidt, you know, would be our next one. I think he's okay to be counted.
Yeah, he did score just today. So he might just get there. The New York Rangers are the best team in the league right now. I think they are arguably certainly the best team in the East.
Yep.
They're the first to clinch, and you know, they'll be the one or the two seed in all likelihood.
Absolutely.
And they have Adam Fox as well, one of the best defensemen in the league.
Yeah, former Norris Trophy winner, and he's pushing for it again. You know, this is a record. This is Panarin's best year by a long shot. But he's been a point a game, maybe even 1.25 points a game for the Rangers since he's been on the team. You know, this is his fifth year on the Rangers, and he's been significantly above a point a game for all of them. No, he is a real superstar.
Impressive.
And this is the best year of his career by far at age 32. Which, you know what, for the Breadman, really happy to hear it. You know, he's also known as Yeast Mode, which is really terrific. His name, I think we've talked about it before, but his name comes after the similar to Panarin, his last name, to Panera Bread.
Right.
Which sounds like, you know, Panera, which it's a common bread thing. As something, you know, to bring it even further, Panera Bread came out of the St. Louis Bread Company, founded by Ken and Linda Rosenthal.
Jewish company out of St. Louis.
So, you know, if and when, if he ever played Panera, if the bread man ever played for St. Louis, it would be a full circle of the St. Louis Bread Company. But between now, you know, there's a Jewish connection to Artemi Panarin in more than just his name.
Yeah. And just one last Jewish bit of hockey news. Boston Bruins goaltender Jeremy Swayman
confirmed
that he is Jewish.
Confirmed.
And I will say that you and I have spent, like, I would say, collectively hours trying to figure out if he was Jewish previously.
Yeah.
And did not come to a firm conclusion.
Yeah.
But thanks to a cameo that he did a few weeks ago, talking about his bar mitzvah, confirmed that he's Jewish. So
I think you said it best, and maybe we should have put this on when Ryan LaVarnway told us about it. But if we want to know if an athlete is Jewish, we should buy bar mitzvah cameos from them.
Yeah, I think that's the trick. We just got to get a cameo fund and get one from someone. Let's see. Wishing somebody a happy bar mitzvah. And if they've had a bar mitzvah themselves or bat mitzvah themselves, more likely than not, they will bring it up.
They will reference it. Mike, I'm gonna call on our producer Mike to talk to the people upstairs and unlock a little bit of a budget for research and bar mitzvah cameos.
Unfortunately, he's giving us the thumbs down, so this might have to be a personal expense here. But we'll find a way to expense it. Anyways, I think that's a good way to leave it for the hockey rundown. But Swayman gives another rooting interest at the top of the East. You know, means that there's a pretty decent chance that there will be a Jewish player on the eastern side of the Stanley.
We now in the Stanley
Cup Finals, at least.
I would put it this way: now the no, I know Hyman was not an All-Star this year, although he should have been. But you know, give us 50 goals, he might make an All-NHL team. We now have a full starting lineup of Jews. A full five. You got Quinn. You got
Hughes. We had Devin Levy, but he hasn't been starting. Yeah.
Yep. We had Devin Levy, but we got the Breadman and Devin Levy wasn't an All-Star, is what I mean to say. Right. Is that Swayman was an All-Star. So we got the Breadman and Hyman on the wings, Jack Hughes up the middle, and Quinn Hughes and Adam Fox, you know, on D. That's a pretty solid team with, you know, I don't love that three out of the five are Americans, or four out of the six, I should say, are going to be on the U.S. national team next year. I don't love that as a Canadian hockey fan. But I'm happy to see they're all going to make Team USA, no question.
For sure.
So that's going to be a pretty Jewish team in both the Olympics and the Four Nations next year.
Absolutely. Okay, so why don't we take a quick break and we will come back with our salute to one of the greatest Jewish sports shows that there's ever been.
That there's ever been.
As we are taping this, we are anticipating the series finale of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
The end of an era. It's been, I think it's been 24 years.
Yeah, so the original Curb special came out in October 1999, and the first season came out the year after that. So it's been about 24, 25 years that Curb has been in our life. Like it's rare. I feel like it's crazy to think of a cultural institution being pre-9/11, like having existed before 9/11. Like I know that's a weird barometer to reach, but I'm just saying, like, for people of our age, like that's kind of crazy. Like, you know, 9/11 happened and you know, Curb was going on. It was before and after it.
I suppose there's a connection to this, but when I want to know, when I think about, like, oh, am I so much older than this person? Like, are you that young? The immediate thought and the question I ask is, like, do you remember 9/11?
Right. Now, before we go too off the rails here, let's take this back to Curb. I think Curb is the most Jewish thing that is broadly popular.
In the mainstream media. Media. Not the media, but you know, in mainstream culture, the most Jewish thing around.
For, you know, essentially a sitcom, it is just I there's parts of it that I can't understand how anyone who's not Jewish or relatively close to Jewish people in their day-to-day life would understand what's going on. It's sort of like Seinfeld, but taking off the training wheels. You know, in Seinfeld, Alexander plays ostensibly Italian character, but it's never really mentioned. Julie Louis-Dreyfus is, you know, of some Jewish background as well. Similarly, he's playing a shiksa. And you know, while Jerry's Jewish, it's just sort of, it's mostly in the background, you know.
But in Curb, it is front and center everywhere. It is about a bunch of, I would say, somewhat obnoxious, very Jewish people in Los Angeles and, you know, environs, just sort of like futzing their way through life and having arguments and meeting for lunch and sitting in delis. You know, as much as Seinfeld was a show about nothing, Curb is a show about nothing and Jews. Jews doing nothing.
And it's also been, I would say, one of the most sports-centric shows that has ever been on TV. It is, I think, true to Larry David's life. You know, it is a reflection of Larry David's life. He's a character in the show based on his real life persona.
But he's a big sports fan.
A huge sports fan, apparently. I heard him on Bill Simmons a couple months ago. You know, Simmons was talking about how he's like a Tuesday night league pass guy. He's watching NBA games on like a a random night.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He'll just turn on whatever sports is on. And that, you know,
he was at the Elite Eight game the other day. You know, he has, you know, a bit notoriously been a big golfer and talked about that a lot. We're going to do a salute to the best sports moments in Curb history.
So Jamie and I don't know what each other have prepared for this. We're going to go back and forth a little bit and talk about our favorite Jewish sports moments in Curb. The first one, it's going to be, you know, I'm going to get us started off this past week, as we just talked about. Larry David, while discussing his version of pillow talk, says that his favorite pillow talk is discussing his favorite hockey team, the New York Rangers, and specifically calls out the bread man for what he does with the puck. Have you seen what the bread man does with the puck? He's going to get 100 points this year. He's the best.
Pretty disgusting stuff from Larry. Basically, he's explaining why he doesn't like pillow talk, and that if somebody wanted to talk about the Rangers, he'd be okay with that.
He'd be okay with it. Exactly. You know, because he got to talk about the bread man. I don't know if Larry knows the bread man is Jewish. I think if he did, you know, I'd love to hear if Larry would say, yeah, that's why I picked him. And not, you know, he could have said Adam Fox. He could have said Igor Shesterkin. But it's also fun saying the bread man. Yeast mode.
Absolutely. I want to mention an early episode. This is in the second season. The episode is called Shaq, and it stars Shaquille O'Neal. Larry is sitting in the courtside seats and sort of stretches out his legs a little
bit. With Richard Lewis, by the way.
Yeah, with Richard Lewis, may he be of blessed memory. Shaq is coming off the bench or walking down the floor court, trips over Larry, and it is believed that he has broken his leg and is going to be out for months.
Oh God! What you doing?
This is like right in the middle of like the Lakers. I guess they're three.
Their championships, absolutely.
Yeah, and as it turns out, Shaq is a huge Seinfeld fan, so Larry brings him all the tapes of Seinfeld. Truly, like a big bin of. Remember, it's a big bin of.
Yeah, he wheels in the VHS on a trolley, on a hospital trolley.
But as it turns out. It was just a, what you call it, like a mistake on the x-ray, and Shaq is fine, and it all works out. So, you know, I don't know if kids these days know, Shaquille O'Neal is like a dominant NBA player. He's not just the guy on TV who has fun with Charles Barkley. He's once a dominant NBA player until he mixes up with Larry.
Yeah, one sort of key part of this episode, which I think is getting away, is the final plot of this episode ends with Larry's doctor cheating in a game of Scattergories. Maybe it's both a Jewish sports moment and a Jewish board games moment.
I'll play another game,
Doc.
Yeah.
How can you cheat at Scattergories?
What are you talking about?
What do you mean? Well, you gave us five names. It's only three here. Listen, Doc. You know what? I'm sick and tired of you. You're fired. Get out. Albert.
I didn't cheat anything.
Get this guy out of here. You're fired.
Right, I won.
Get out. Get out.
Come on. Al, come on.
I told you.
Get his ass out of here.
The timer ran out. Beat it. I didn't hear the timer.
Didn't run out. You cheated.
It's a timer.
No, yeah. It's not the timer. Get out.
I was going to write it down.
Don't go to nothing. Go to get your ass out of here. Get out.
Get out.
Gabe, what else you got for Jewish Curb moments?
I want to talk about, this is a little bit, how do I say this? It's a bit sensitive. I want to put a little content warning on this.
Sure.
In the 10th season, I believe it is, where Larry's close friend, Carl, unfortunately decides to end his life with his suicide note saying, I just couldn't handle another Jets season.
How do you kill yourself when you're playing so well?
I know.
Did he leave a note?
Yeah. He said, I can't take any more disappointment.
Holy shit.
The hell's he talking about?
Holy shit. I can't take any more disappointment. That's what he used to say when we would watch the Jets games together. I can't take any more disappointment. That's an exact quote.
Really?
Jeff, I've
seen that guy sob after losses. During games, I've seen him sob.
Who knew he was so tortured?
And they just kept
losing, and it kept eating at him and eating at him. And he just... he couldn't take any more disappointment.
Oh, my God.
The Jets killed Carl. And a little bit of the Knicks.
Many Jewish people are Jets fans. I know several in my family. I know several not in my family. But just sort of the emotional weight, the struggle, the issue with being a Jets fan is too much for some people to bear. And to make it even worse, when Larry is describing such a thing to people, he immediately wants to justify it. You know, right. Well, Sam Darnold got mono. It ruined the whole season. I understand. So, you know, Carl, unfortunately has a, you know, he makes that decision. And then when Larry is sort of starting to get intimate with Carl's widow, decides to, instead of, you know, honor Carl's memory, that's not why he doesn't have sex with her. He doesn't because they argue about the Jets tight end situation.
Yeah, he can't stop talking about the Jets. Bit of an anticlimax to the episode, so to speak.
I would describe it, there's a very famous Jewish joke, and I'm sure you know this, about a man in the desert, wandering the desert, going, "Oi, am I thirsty? Oi, am I thirsty?" And someone brings him water, and he sips the water, and he goes, "Ah." And then he says, "Oi, was I thirsty?" That's what that episode reminds me
of. Yeah, the immortal pain of being a Jets fan. The next episode I want to talk about is the fourth season episode, The Carpool Lane, which involves Larry wanting to go to a Dodgers game. Larry wants to go to a Dodgers game. Unfortunately, there's traffic in Los Angeles. The only way he can get there is by taking the carpool lane. He doesn't have anyone to go with, so he hires a prostitute to sit in the car with him and attend the Dodgers game with him.
So that he can get
in the carpool lane.
What you into today? A little lollipop love, a little digging for diamonds.
See, actually, I'm not really interested in any sex per se.
What, you want them freaky motherfuckers or something?
To tell you the truth, what I'd really like to do is I want to go to Dodger Stadium, and I want to go to the game, and I'll pay you for your time. Maybe, 5 hours it'll be.
You just want me to sit in the car?
Just sit in the car. That's all you have to do.
Oh, you a crazy son of a bitch. All right. $1,000.
$1,000? What, are you kidding me?
That's,
$200 an hour?
Exactly. I can get 4 blowjobs an hour.
4 blowjobs an hour?
Oh, yes, I'm good, okay?
Hey, I drove a cab. I used to drive around for 2 hours. I couldn't get a fare. You're telling me you're getting 4 blowjobs in an hour?
Yes, honey. You done picked up the best.
And as he is there, he bumps into his friend Marty Funkhauser, again, played by the brilliant Bob Einstein, who is no longer with us. And Funkhauser won't allow Larry to sit in his seat because Funkhauser's dead father is it's reserved for Funkhauser's dead father. And leads to some hijinks. There's some marijuana involved, but a great episode. You know, very, very interesting. I think it's very important, and people should check us out if they have never seen it. They filmed in Dodger Stadium, which is pretty, you know, rare, but, you know, obviously they get to film things there every now and then.
During an actual game with
actual game.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the same time, unbeknownst to them, they caught footage of a man in Larry's section, you know, getting up to go get some candy. This man was later accused of murder. He was accused of being involved in a gangland shooting. And his alibi was that he couldn't have done it because he was at the Dodgers game. The way that they prove this is by getting all the footage, the raw footage from the Curb Your Enthusiasm episode filming, going through it and discovering that he was seen in the footage. It made it so that, along with some other evidence, he must have been there, and that his story was truthful. They made a documentary about this.
Quite a story.
The documentary is called Long Shot. It's on Netflix. It was distributed on Netflix. It's 40 minutes long. I would say, as a lawyer, it's like a wonderful little documentary about like how evidence comes about, like how you do lawyering, like how you get evidence, how you investigate something. It's about Curb. It's about baseball. It is 40 minutes, and it's well worth your time. I would definitely recommend it.
Do we know if anyone who's involved in that production was Jewish?
I can only imagine some. I can't remember. I think the lawyer. I think the lawyer maybe is, or but I'm not. But I'm not certain.
So it was produced by Todd Wiseman Jr.
Okay, maybe I don't know.
I mean, he is from Hollywood, Florida. We're sort of going in here. It's likely. Anywho.
But absolutely. Anyways, it's definitely worth checking out, and it's a very funny coincidence that this was being filmed there. And honestly, it pretty much got this guy off a murder charge.
It's
you know, an innocent guy, so pretty amazing. Gabe, any more? Should we talk some golf? I mean, golf was sort of omnipresent in Curb. There's a lot
one
of great.
More. I think we should end with golf, but I have one more moment before we go to golf, and it's sure. In. I think it's a season 5 episode, the Larry David sandwich. The plot of the episode is Larry has been given a sandwich at his local deli, and it is fairly disgusting. His friend Ted Danson has a standard turkey club named after him. And, you know, it's sort of a microcosm of who they are. You know, Whitefish is an acquired taste, but those who love it like it a lot, like those for Larry. But elsewhere in the episode, it is the High Holidays, and Larry and Cheryl get their tickets for the High Holiday services from a scalper standing outside of the synagogue. Scalping, one of the great traditions of being a sports fan, especially a New York sports fan, is you don't need to buy tickets ahead of time. You'll buy some on the street. You'll buy some from a scalper. Larry negotiates with the guy for prices for tickets and buys two right up close to the Bima, just right behind the Yankees dugout. The Yankee, in this case, being the rabbi. But it's right up close to the Bima, right under there on the canter side.
Right? You're not screwing me.
You're going to screw with me, maybe. Yeah. You know, I'm giving you the deal of a lifetime.
Hey.
Oh, got him.
All good.
All right. Got him.
How much? Really?
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
I don't understand why you buy tickets.
We buy tickets.
It's a very popular day.
Too many Jews to go around.
It's not enough, exactly.
I love that Jewish sports moment because it's sort of bringing it's bringing the ballpark to the synagogue, which is something I think as Jews who are into sports have always wanted.
I think we'd be remiss of not stating what's in the Larry David sandwich. I think anytime it comes up, it's worth repeating what's in it. Whitefish.
Yeah.
Sable.
Which is another kind of type of fish. It's a different kind of whitefish.
I think, is Sable smoked? Is it sometimes smoked? Is that the idea?
Sable is usually served smoked, as is whitefish salad. It's two different kinds of smoked fish, but Sable is whitefish. As they say whitefish, okay, Jamie is a vegetarian. I'm explaining this. He doesn't know this.
Yeah.
It's okay.
I don't know from Sable.
Yeah, he doesn't know from Sable. Basically, the way it works is that whitefish, it's like tuna. Like, you know what a tuna salad looks like. It's got like mayonnaise and flaked fish mixed all together, usually with like salt, maybe a celery, something like that.
Sure.
Sable is often served as like flakes, like a whole hunk of fish that is flaked. So it is a sort of a paste, a smear of fish with hunks of a different fish on top of it.
And of course, a cream cheese base on the sandwich, and the condiments are onions and capers.
So I would find that delicious. I know this is controversial.
Yeah, this seems extremely up your alley.
There are certain places we can go. I can go deep on this. There's a big debate over whether you have cream cheese with the whitefish or not. I'm a no cream cheese with whitefish place. Some places like to cut their whitefish with a little cream cheese. I find that to be a bit, you know, a bit non-sporting, as it were. But yeah, with the onions and capers, whitefish and onions. Oh yeah, baby.
So let's move on and talk about some curb golf. I think Larry is a member of the Riviera, which is
in real life, not
in
on
real
the show.
Life, yeah.
They don't film it there.
Yeah, they don't film it there. In the show, it's a fictional golf club, but he's
run by
he's
Mr.
a long
Takahashi.
Time member. Mr. Takahashi runs it. It's called the Black Swan. Or sorry, is the club called the Black Swan?
No, that's his.
The Black Swan on the logo.
It just features a Black Swan.
Yeah, but there's a lot of great golf stuff that goes on in Curb. Early on, there is the weatherman who Larry accuses of faking that it's going to be raining.
His
weather report.
So he has the
course to himself.
So he'd have the course to his friend, course to himself, exactly. And then Larry, you know, doesn't trust him a second time, and then does get caught totally in the rain and alone.
Yeah.
All right, Larry.
Yes.
There's a low pressure system sitting out over the coast. The jet stream brings that into this area.
The jet stream
is controlled by the rotation of the Earth. Ooh. You know who controls that?
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what? There's a jet stream of bullshit coming out of your mouth, right, my friend.
Okay,
you are busted, buddy.
Stop pointing with the cane.
You're busted.
He gets to play with Gary Player, who guests in an episode. Cheryl gets him around with Gary Player as part of that. There's an episode where he tries to his beloved five wood. Gets accidentally buried with Marty Funkhauser's dad. And he tries to steal the golf club back from the open casket for Leo Funkhauser.
Also, very important to mention, similarly, also with the club, a key plot point of our previous season hinges on Larry accusing his best friend Richard of cheating with an illegal putter. I don't know if you've ever played at a Jewish golf course before. Or been to a Jewish golf course, but this sort of debate I think happens once a day at every Jewish golf club in North America.
Sure.
Oakdale, you know, our local one, Riviera, I'm sure is quite common, that sort of thing there. You know, Brentwood, as our friend Dan Rappaport is a member of.
Sure.
You know, I think that sort of thing happens all the time.
In the sort of, you know, I think A+ brilliant Palestinian chicken episode, That also takes place around a golf tournament where they're playing a four-ball tournament or five-ball yep. tournament, actually, which is very odd. And that is where Bob Einstein, Marty Funkhauser, who finds religion, decides to Koufax them by yep. not playing on because it's Shabbat.
It's Shabbat.
He won't play, but until he gets a dispensation from his rabbi that he can play golf with them, it doesn't work out because Larry, the social assassin, unfortunately. I can't remember what exactly happens. He reveals that one of the players is having an affair with the other one's wife.
That Larry Miller. I don't remember.
And they don't lose the tournament. They don't win the tournament.
Because he finds out because Larry Miller is taking his affair partner to the Palestinian chicken restaurant where no one would recognize him.
Right. More recently, he's playing golf and he hits Troy Kotzer, the deaf actor.
Because he doesn't yell ball. Four.
Because he doesn't yell four, because Troy Kotzer wouldn't be able to hear. Lots of golf course. I mean, just like golf course being the place where they hang out and eat. There's a great yep. episode early on when they get kicked out of one golf course and he applies to be a member at a Gentile golf course and yep. has to pretend to drive a Hummer and claims he met Cheryl while volunteering for Reagan, I believe.
Let me say, the golf course is magnificent, too. You know, I'm fairly new to golf. Polo was my game.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Well, I had a terrible accident. I got hit with a mallet in the head and fell off the horse. And unfortunately, my polo days are over. But I found the swing really works for golf.
He's a natural.
I picked it up right away.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's right. It is a similar
it's
swing.
It's a similar swing. Think about it, James.
Certainly an arc.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Okay, right. I have one more. I want to go one more.
Sure.
Which is when Richard Lewis needs a kidney, in order to get him up the donor list, Larry needs to secure a Babe Ruth autographed baseball
right.
from a acquaintance of his who was quite religious. And I would say quite a chazer in the modern Orthodox Los Angeles community. And there's a lot of great scenes of Larry trying to schmooze the guy, pretending to speak Yiddish colloquially.
He needs to get a kidney from the guy.
He needs to get a kidney from the guy. Yeah. And he's offering him the Babe Ruth baseball.
And then they take him skiing. And Larry has to, Larry refused to jump off the ski list.
Yeah,
ski lift. The Babe Ruth, I think it's a Mickey Mantle ball gets stolen by Richard's nurse.
Yes, exactly. I identify with a lot of that in that episode. One, the pretending to speak Yiddish in order to impress modern Orthodox people. That is quite a move. And two, I have never been on skis in my life, and I have no interest in doing it ever. So I understand Larry's reticence there.
Yeah, I think if we had to make a Jewish Goyish determination on that, skiing definitely comes down on the Goyish side.
Yeah. It's not a Jewish sport. I don't think there's been any great Jewish skiers. We're not a mountain people. We're not a right. mountain people.
And I'm pretty sure when when they break up in the first place, or maybe it's a different time where Larry refuses to take a call with Cheryl because he's watching a Jets game, I think.
Yeah.
Anyways, the point is sports. Very big part of Larry David's real life. Very, very big part of the show. We're sad to see Curb go, but it's given us a lot of joy. And I think it'll be a long time before we see a sports-oriented show that's as Jewish as Curb, if ever again.
Or a Jewish-oriented show that's as sports-referenced as Curb. Right. Quickly, before we wrap up, want to stay on the golf theme for a minute and give a shout-out to recently discovered to be Jewish PGA Tour pro Max Greiserman, who achieved in his rookie year his first top 10 ever this past week at the Houston Children's Open.
The Houston Open, I believe it is
Texas, the Texas Children's
Hospital. Houston Open.
I think it is quite a Jewish move to have a great outcome at a tournament that is sponsored by doctors.
Sure.
Another Jewish golfer, Ben Silverman, also made the cut and made some money. He had a good result.
I think Berger made the cut too. Lipsky didn't, but Berger did too.
So a lot of good, of the five Jews on tour, four of them were in this tournament. Max, an interesting story. His father, we talked about this, I think, last week. His father is a mathematics professor at Columbia, which is probably all of the background we need for Judaism. He's quite, he was notable because he looks a lot like Rory McIlroy. Which makes you think that the Northern Irish and the Jews might have a lot of phrenological structure comparison to one another. They don't get that very often. We're not often accused of being Ulstermen. But in the case of Max Greiserman and Roy McIlroy, maybe they'll do a cultural exchange. Who knows?
Right. I should say to people, you know, more casual golf fans than us who are tuning in for the Masters, I believe the only Jew playing in the Masters will be Max Homa.
Yeah.
Unless one of the amateurs is Jewish. I haven't seen who that is. I don't know, but I'd be surprised if any of them happen to be Jewish. So Max Homa is your rooting interest for the Masters if you're a Jewish sports fan. But lots of exciting stuff. I mean, again, like, you know, Lipsky, Silverman, Greiserman, Berger, these guys are all placing and having good showings this year. So I think we'll see a lot more of them.
And
hopefully some of them should be at some of the major tournaments this year.
Absolutely. I mean, we're definitely going to see, we're definitely going to see Homa at a lot of majors. Obviously he's in this one. And with any luck, we'll see Greiserman and Silverman, who are continuing to perform, you know, getting better. They're both rookies on the PGA Tour this year. So I should say Silverman's not a rookie. He was on the tour before, but he's back after a bit of a walkabout. But both of them have had some really good results in the last couple of weeks. So hopefully they can move that and perform well.
Yeah. Why don't we leave it there for now? We'll be back again in a few weeks talking baseball, NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs,
Pesach,
golf, everything you got. Passover food takes, maybe. I've always got a few of those in my back pocket. Oh,
yeah, always.
Until next time, thanks for joining us. As always, we're brought to you by the Canadian Jewish News. You can find the Canadian Jewish News website at cjn.ca. And follow us on Twitter, at Menschwarmers, for up-to-the-minute Jewish sports news. See you next time.